The goal is not to save every dollar you make, and the goal is not to spend every dollar you make either. It's really about how am I balancing taking care and enjoying life today with also making sure I'm going to be okay in the future and able to enjoy the things that I want in the future too.
Hey everyone, I'm Annie Dickerson, and on behalf of the entire Good Egg Investments team, I wanted to welcome you to this episode of The Life and Money Show, the show where we talk about everything from investing to financial freedom to parenting, traveling, creating a life by design, and everything in between. I'm here with my amazing co-host, Susan Elliott. Susan,
hello.
Start by sharing with everybody a little bit about what we're going to talk about today.
Well, we have Kelsa Dickey on today, and she is a renowned financial coach in that she has started her own financial coaching business. And now she actually teaches people also how to be financial coaches. So she's been in this since before the words financial and coach were put together into one title. And I was drawn to Kelsa and all of her work because of the perspective she takes as opposed to a financial advisor. So we do talk a lot about that. What is a coach versus an advisor when it comes to your finances? And I think because in my own work around building my wealth, around my money mindsets, and all of these things that are impacting that, it's like this big holistic sphere that we talk about a lot on this podcast. And so it isn't just the accounting decisions. It isn't just the numbers. And I was really drawn to financial coaching as an avenue to be able to tease all that apart because it takes into perspective a little bit more broad, but also giving you the very tactical things that you need to be able to make your goals a reality. So we talked to Kelsa a lot about how that all works with financial coaching, about what she does, how she feels like people at every stage in their life journey in money can really benefit from financial coaching and just the way that we perceive our money.
Yeah. I mean, money is such a pervasive thing and it causes so much stress for so many people. And you're bringing in stuff that you've learned from your parents or your grandparents or your neighbor or whoever. And sometimes it's hard to tease that apart. And just like when you have a coach in a sport that you might play, they help you to see your blind spots and they help you to set and reach goals to stay accountable. It's the same with a financial coach, except instead of basketball, we're talking about money. And in this show, we also talk about how financial coaches can help you not just with your own views around money, but if you're in relationship, helping you as a couple to get on the same page, which might having a third party sometimes can help alleviate some of that awkwardness or that like the existing dynamics within a relationship to have somebody else come in and ask those questions and help you stay on track can be such a huge help. So if you're in a place where you're trying to wrap your arms around your money situation or what to do with your money, how to get started investing, this is going to be a great conversation for you. Now, before we dive in, one quick thing, which is if you are at the sort of the beginning of your investing journey specific to real estate, and you're not quite sure which direction to go, you're not sure if you should buy a rental property or if you do already have a rental property, you're not sure if you should keep it or you should sell it, get involved in passive investing or what that's all about. Just like we talk about with Kelsa, it can be hard to tease apart all of your questions and all of your thoughts and get the right resources. So what we've done is we've put together all of our wisdom and our resources into one simple page. It's our Start Here page on our website, and it'll walk you through everything from what is financial freedom and how do you retire early? Can you do it? To how to invest with your 401k? What is passive investing? Is it right for you? What are the risks? What's an accredited investor? We cover it all. Just go to goodegginvestments.com/start. All right. With that, let's go ahead and dive into our conversation with Kelsa Dickey. Kelsa, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
We're thrilled to have you here. You've accomplished so much. I'm sure all the people listening to this show are going to be super impressed with everything that you've done. You are a founder, you're a CEO, you're an author, you're a podcaster. We definitely want to know how you do it all. But before we get there, give us some of the highlights of your story. How did you get to this point? What led you down this path toward financial coaching and what you do now?
Yeah. So I started as a financial coach 15 years ago now. And I joke that I sort of like made it up because 15 years ago, there really wasn't anything anybody called a financial coach at the time. I actually started as a financial advisor for 3 years. And the part of money that I really loved helping people with was the part, like somebody would come in with debt and I'd be like, yes, let's tackle that. I can't wait. Let's roll up our sleeves. But of course, you know, this was about 20 years ago. There was no way to get paid as a financial advisor back in the day. It was all commission-based structures and that sort of thing. So fee-based planning really wasn't a thing. So I would help the people with debt or who really didn't have a handle on their money. And I would love it. I would like love to spend all the time doing that, but wasn't getting paid for it. And so that's when I decided to become a financial coach. But really sort of my love for money came just from experiencing, watching my parents and what they experienced growing up. Annie, I think it was a few episodes ago, you were talking about how you grew up and you had sort of two different perspectives growing up. And I was listening to that and I was like, oh my God, the same is true for me. My parents were divorced and my mom really was very stressed with money, but it was because she didn't really have any of it. So she had a good job, but she was raising three girls on her own. There was just more money going out than what was coming in. And I remember watching her sit there for hours sometimes at our dining room table, just trying to manage her money. So it wasn't for lack of trying. She would have a legal pad and a calculator and a stack of opened mail and a stack of unopened mail. And she was just trying to figure out like, where's it going? What am I doing? How am I juggling it? And then there was my dad who had a really high income and sort of like no care in the world and had a lot of discretionary money and that sort of thing, but was also stressed about money. But it was for a very different reason. It was sort of like the very typical, very standard keeping up with the Joneses sort of mentality that I witnessed. So had a lot of very nice things. Paid for, I was able to afford a lot of nice things, but I almost feel like didn't really appreciate his money. Didn't feel secure, I would say, or solid with his money. So also experienced a lot of stress and would complain about money at the exact same time. So I heard a lot of complaining about money growing up, but for two very different reasons. And it was like, it doesn't matter if you have a lot of it or a little of it, like money can cause stress is sort of the takeaway that I learned really young. And so that's when I, senior in college, or excuse me, high school, a guidance counselor said, what do you want to do when you're older? And I said, I want to help people with their money. And so that's when he said, you should become a financial advisor. And I was like, okay, became a financial advisor, practiced for a few years, really enjoyed sitting and talking about money. That's something that I feel like I've always enjoyed. I've always loved sort of the analytical, but also the creative nature of money. I don't think it's as analytical sometimes as what people want it to be. I actually think there's a whole other side of it. And I do think, thankfully, I think women, we tend to bring that element to money over the last two decades, especially. It's definitely taken hold a little bit better. And I love that. I think it's very needed. And so then I became a financial coach. And I remember thinking when I first started that I was just going to be helping people with budgeting or paying off debt. And it has become something so much more than that. And what I realized is it doesn't really matter where you're starting from. Money is a lifelong journey. So wherever you're starting from, that's just one skill set you need to learn. So you need to learn how to sort of manage your money or get out of debt, let's say if you have it, or save for a short-term goal or a whammy if you're not ready for that. And then once you do that, you're just onto the next goal, right? And the next stage and sort of the next big endeavor. And so whether it's launching a business or paying down debt or buying a house or investing in real estate, right? Like each one of these requires a new skill set. And so money is a lifelong journey. So some of my clients have worked with me for years and they're really good at managing their money day by day, week by week these days, right? So they don't need me for that anymore, but they love just having a person that they can meet with a few times a year, say, here's what I got coming up. Help me make sure I'm going to navigate it really smart financially, right? Like, let me just talk through it. They do better sort of verbally processing life with somebody. And so it's sort of equal parts aspirational and analytical and practical, right? So we're going to spend some time sort of talking about the future. What do you want? What are you trying to build in your life? But then we're going to get really strategic and really practical. And we're going to crunch all the numbers and sort of create a plan to make sure you're using your money to create that goal.
Awesome. I love what you said about the lifelong process of this, because I think that I've come upon money issues in my past and felt like I worked through them. And you just want to like cross it off the list and say like, I've dealt with that. But then it kind of manifests in new forms depending on where you're at in your different stages of life. And there's like underlying psychological things happening with money and the creative nature of how we think about money and how we do that. And it seems like that's a little bit more along the coaching veins. Can you help us understand a little bit more about like the difference between what you get with a financial advisor versus what you get with a financial coach?
Yeah, I would say one of the things to think about is the similarity first. The similarity is that we all talk about money, right? It's just the different part of money that we talk about. And there's a few different ways of thinking about that. So the timeline is part of the difference. So I might be looking at sort of where does the client want to go in the next 3 to 5 years? Yes, we're going to talk about more long-term than that, but it might be more from a vision standpoint, sort of just getting that as sort of our North Star or our compass, if you will. But we're going to really be thinking strategically about the next 3 to 5 years. The money you have sort of coming in and out today, what are you doing with it? And how can we make sure you're ready for those things that are coming up? Where a financial advisor is probably going to be a little bit more long-term to the short-term, right? There is a little bit of overlap there, but it's like, let's really plan for your future. Let's look for a time when maybe you aren't working your 9 to 5 and you need an income still. How are we making sure that you're ready for that? They're going to be much more equipped to do long-term analysis, I would say, as far as projections from whatever those real estate or stock market or whatever type of investments the person has. Mitigating risk, and I would also say protecting a person's assets, is definitely the job of a financial advisor compared to a financial coach. So that's the timeline part of it. And then I would say, really, what part of money is the difference? So I, as a financial coach, I'm really looking at the money flowing in and out of your checking account and savings accounts, right? So today's money, what are you doing with it? Once the money comes into your checking account, how do you know if you should save it or spend it or invest it? So how are we balancing all of those things and the real-time, short-term nature of things? And again, the advisor might have more to do with your investments, your assets, your liabilities, your net worth type of items, your insurance, making sure you're protected, that sort of thing. So all very important, all very, very needed. So typically what we say is you need to have your whole sort of rock star financial team built out. So, you know, a financial coach to help you with today's money, making sure that you can find the money that your advisor wants you to be putting away. So, and then an advisor, and then an accountant, oftentimes, right? Maybe a really solid insurance agent. I think we're all needed. So typically an advisor will tell one of my clients, like, you need this much to save for retirement. And my job is to sort of help the client find that money in a balanced way. So a lot of the times a person will think, well, I don't have that. So they don't even do anything, right? So if I don't have $1,000 a month to invest, so then why bother? Sort of mentality can creep in. And so my job is to say, well, we can find 200 of it. And then in a couple of months, let's revisit it and see if we can't find a little bit more. And then we can find a little bit more and like that kind of thing. I equate financial coaching to sort of that as a personal trainer. So everybody kind of knows that they should maybe go to the gym, or you might even know what you should do in the gym. Some people know that, but your coach or your trainer will help you add weight, right? Or do one more rep or get stronger faster, right? Or avoid making mistakes that injure yourself and that sort of thing. We do the same thing as financial coaches, just with money. So I'm going to encourage you to save just a little bit more, challenge you to pay a little bit more towards your debt, or drive your income just a little bit more and avoid some of the mistakes like the spending decisions, some of those spending triggers, those temptations, that sort of thing that might injure you financially. So it's really the same thing, financial coaching and sort of personal training in the here and now.
Wow. I like that. I like that there's the tactical aspect in what you do and the day-to-day and comparing it with a trainer. I mean, I know that that's probably where you got your idea to start Fiscal Fitness, your financial coaching firm in Phoenix. I love that comparison. I also enjoy tackling physical goals. And I find that the parallel to that, to doing one more rep, one more mile, is really also very aligned with my financial goals too. And I heard you start to talk about these like psychological barriers that we have too, where I loved how, oh, I need to invest $1,000 a month. I remember seeing a financial advisor come to my firm when I used to be an engineer and saying, you need to save 10%, 20% to be able to, in the calculator, get here. And I was just like, there's no way. I can barely make ends meet now with where we're living and having a young family. And you do just resort to saying, well, I'll just work forever. As ridiculous as that sounds now. So talk to us a little bit more about those psychological barriers that you see with individuals, even those who have wealth, but maybe struggle with spending or investing it. And how do you approach these kinds of anxieties in your coaching?
Yeah, I would say that you actually hit the nail on the head, Susan, with one of them, which is that progress over perfection. So it doesn't matter if you're just starting to invest or if you've been investing for a while, but the goal you have is maybe to retire 10 years earlier than you were really thinking. Like maybe they made a big change at your job, let's say, and you went from loving it to sort of like being miserable every day. And you're now all of a sudden like, you know what, this feels more urgent to me. And so now my goal is a lot faster. So I need to take it up a notch. The mindset sort of barrier that some people face is that like they can't see how they're going to do all of it right away. So they don't think that they should do any of it, right? We're really progress over perfection, that whatever I can do today, let me at least least start, right? Let me at least do something. And then a month later, I'm going to just do a little bit more. And a month later, I'm going to do a little bit more. And eventually you will get there. It's one of those things where starting is one of the best things you can do, even if you don't have sort of like the entire plan figured out. And I'm a financial person. I love planning. I love sort of analyzing and calculating things. And I love when things balance and that sort of thing. But I do think one of the things that my job is oftentimes is to show a client, like, we can't see how this entire thing is going to play out perfectly, right? Like, we can't see how this is exactly going to happen based on your income today, based on the debt you have today, or the amount you have to put towards savings or your current spending and those types of things. But also things change, right? And if we can get started today, in just a few months, our goals change, our priorities change, the what we want out of our life and out of our spending changes, and we'll be able to do more in a little bit. And sometimes it's like, let's get started now. So that's definitely the first barrier, is that starting and doing something is better than nothing, absolutely, no matter where you're at with your goal. The other thing I would think, or I would say is a big barrier, and this is absolutely true for wealthy individuals, specifically people with really high incomes, is this idea that you have to know where every dollar goes in order to be good with money, or that managing your money in some way is the same as tracking every dollar. So what happens is a lot of people are like, I have plenty of spending money. I shouldn't have to like spend time tracking every dollar, right? And I do sort of agree with that. It really depends on sort of how tight your budget is and how, the depth of detail you care about as an individual, and everybody's a little different, right? So one thing that I pride myself on is helping a person manage their money in a way that is going to be best for them and really embracing their own natural talents and skill set. So for example, some people really thrive with specificity. The more detail, the better, right? Like, it gives them things to control. They really like compartmentalization, for example. Like, it really helps their brain, right, to see things clearly. And other people are easily overwhelmed with too much specificity and too much detail. It's like, I now am not bought into this at all because I'm just overwhelmed by the level of complexity. So for me, it's like, for a lot of people, when it comes to managing your money, if you don't have to know where every single dollar goes, it's okay to not know where every single dollar goes. What I would recommend, that the number I want you to know, is your financial progress number. How much are you putting towards your goals? How much are you putting towards the things that are most important to you? Get really specific on those numbers. And the other things, we can put systems in place that you do have some guardrails, right? So that you're not just going too off the wall and it's then violating the goals that you have for yourself or the things that you want for your future, but where you don't have to obsess over every little dollar, because a lot of people are not going to want to do that. But again, you will hear this all the time get spread everywhere, which is like, people who are good with their money know where every dollar goes. I don't believe that. I really don't. So I manage my money very well. We achieve our goals. We are very good financially as a family and that sort of thing. And I couldn't tell you last month how much I spent on groceries or eating out, because we sort of just like, we have a spending account. We know how much is in there. During the week, we use our debit card for it and we feel totally fine about it. And as long as that money is being spent and we're not going over, we're good. It doesn't matter if it went to eating out or gas, or if I bought something for my kids at Target or something like that. It's like, I know that this amount that I have doesn't harm my ability to put money towards my future and towards my goals. And it feels very balanced for me. And now again, some people want that and some people don't, but I do think for a lot of people who have a cushion, don't adopt this mindset that you have to know where every dollar goes in order to be good with your money. You can be good with your money without sort of that obsession, if you will. And then the last thing I will say, the last sort of mental barrier, I hear this a lot, is people who say, well, I didn't learn this growing up. My parents didn't teach this to me. And I do think for a lot of us, that is true, I will say. So it's not to say that you shouldn't say that if it's true. It's sort of the what people allow that to do to their belief system on what they're capable of financially because of that, right? And one thing I like people to know is that I have a degree in finance. I have a master's in accounting. So I legitimately learned this stuff. You could say that I actually learned this stuff, paid a pretty penny to learn it. And the really everyday, practical, realistic part of managing your money is not what I learned. It is not what was taught to me in those degrees that I got. So even though I actually did learn this stuff, it really wasn't the everyday practical stuff that we were taught in school. And so I still even then had to sort of figure out what is going to work best for me, because they can give you sort of an academic approach. They can sort of tell you definitions of things. They can give you the analytical, mathematical calculations for things. But when it comes to thinking about what's going to work best for me, how can I manage my money in a way that I will like and that I will be sustainable for me, I'll be able to do it for a very long time. And the idea of what should I be spending my money on? What's most important to me? What is my value system pointing towards? That part isn't taught in schools. It's not taught in academia and that sort of thing. And so don't let that be sort of a limiting belief of what you're capable in the future, just because maybe the past you didn't learn that kind of stuff. Most people don't. And there is an element that has to be figured out as you sort of go through life of what's going to work for you and what's not going to work for you too.
I love that first you gave me the permission slip to not worry about every single dollar in my budget. I can't stand that. And it gives me anxiety. Like I get the shoulds. I should have this figured out. I should, but we're hitting our goals. We're doing great. We're not going into the negative. I don't have credit card debt. There's all these signals to me that like, it's okay to not know how much I spent on eating out last month. So thank you for giving me that permission slip. So the second thing that you said there was how our personal values and goals shape an individual financial strategy. And I like that there's almost no one who learns that, right? So saying I didn't learn the accounting side. Well, luckily, like a lot of people did, and you can hire someone to help you with that. I'm just happy to hear that financial coaching kind of takes on those other things. So
what I love about it, I'll stack on top of what Susan is saying. So I love those insights into different perspectives on money, different relationships with money, different blocks that people have with money. What I'm curious about is what happens when you have different styles within one partnership. So one person really wants to know where every single dollar went. The other person's like, babe, doesn't matter. We're hitting our goals. We're like, doesn't matter. How do you reach some sort of consensus? Because I know that money stress can be a big source of relationship issues. So how do you advise people or coach people on that?
Yeah, I definitely think this is something I had to work through with my husband as well, just coming into it with two different perspectives. My have a podcast that's been around for years. And the original name of the podcast was The Saver and the Spender, which because it was my husband and I both that would record episodes, and he is the spender and I'm considered the saver. And it was like, how do we make that work with both of us? Right. And I believe that there are strengths in both of those. Right. So, and that's really an important piece of just about money in general, is that the goal is not to save every dollar you make. And the goal is not to spend every dollar you make either. It's really about how am I balancing taking care and enjoying life today with also like making sure I'm going to be okay in the future and able to enjoy the things that I want in the future too. So how am I doing both of those things? That's really, really important. So it's good to have sort of both savers and spenders. And I truly believe that while it might be different for every couple, there is a way that we can set it up that works for both people. It might take a few iterations of trying to figure out what that looks like or how we do it. But I'll give you an example. Just because I'm the one that sort of manages the money, I'm the one that logistically transfers money here and there and pays the bills and updates spreadsheets because I enjoy that stuff. Obviously, it's my job and I really do enjoy it. And my husband would rather be a little bit more hands-off with it. We don't both need to be the one managing the logistics of the money. I don't believe that is a two-person job these days. But we are both responsible for making decisions about what we do with our money. I do believe that is a two-person job. So once we make decisions about it together, sort of like what's important to you, what would you like to see and what would I like to see, then I do think it's okay if one person is sort of responsible for like implementing, pushing the buttons in the computer and that sort of thing. So there are sort of two distinct roles there. Oftentimes you might hear financial gurus say like both people should be sitting down and managing money together. And I just don't think that is very realistic for busy families. If you've got young kids and that sort of thing, having two people sit down at a computer for 20 minutes. One is watching the other one. It's just really inefficient, if you ask me. So taking some time to have the conversations, I think, is really important first. And having conversations about started off somewhat general. I think the more detailed you get early on, the more overwhelming that can be. So start general. Like, what would you like out of money? What is most important for you with money? How do you see money, right? Like all of those types of things. What is your view on debt? So you can have some of those more general conversations. And then we want to implement it. But I believe that I always tell my husband, even though I'm the one that pushes all the buttons, I don't want to be the gatekeeper. He works hard for the money too. It is both of our money. Just because I'm the one that like sees it and touches sort of the logistics of it doesn't mean that I want to be able to grant or deny permission if he wants something. So my husband enjoys woodworking. So that of course involves tools, and it seems randomly like he always needs like a new tool to do his woodworking. So we just have a woodworking, like Michael hobby fund, and he can do whatever he wants, right? He doesn't have to ask permission. And there are times we put money in and all of a sudden he'll come home with like a really expensive tool. And you can tell there's like a source of pride. He's like, oh, I've been saving my money for it kind of thing. And it's like, cool. I think it's wonderful. And so it's like, as long as we're achieving our goals, I think there are ways that you can set money up to work for everybody. Whether that's here's your money, here's your account, this is for you to do whatever you want with. As long as we're not tapping into the goal fund, it doesn't really matter sort of where it goes. I do think that there are some ways of doing that. And then I do think being able to see money clearly is really important when it comes to couples, because what can happen if we don't see it clearly, it feels like it's one person's opinion and their way of doing things is interfering with the picture that they're trying to communicate to their spouse. When really, if we can, and this is where truly like a financial coach or a third party can be really helpful, because I don't have a horse in the race. Right? My goal is not to get you to spend your money on what's important to me. My job is to get you to spend your money on what's most important to you. So if I can show you, here's the situation we have. Your income is this, our expenses are this. These three categories are your biggest expenses. Are we good with that? Are those the three things that are most important to us? Because if they're not, then can we redirect some of that money to go towards the things that are more important to you and that kind of thing. And it's not about one person being right or wrong. It's about the situation that we're facing in front of us. And let's be a team and solve this together, I think. So if we can bring that energy into it, which is like, this is our money, this is our situation, this is our future that we're building together, right? How do we want to put the money behind that? I think that's sort of the best approach to take when it comes to couples.
Yeah, it sounds like the communication is so key, especially when we each grow up, as we talked about earlier on in the conversation, we each grow up with different thoughts and perspectives around money based on what our parents taught us. And when we come together in relationship, you're bringing perhaps baggage or past experiences into it. And that communication might not always be so easy. Even sometimes I have trouble talking to my husband about like, maybe let's invest in this, or what about this fund, or what about this goal that we have? It's not always easy. And so that's where I imagine having a financial coach is so different than having a financial advisor, because an advisor isn't going to come and sit with you and look at your money habits and look at, okay, how can we pull a little bit more money here toward this goal? Whereas a coach is going to sit with you and week to week, month to month, help you plan that and get on the same page together. Last question I have around coach versus advisor, because I think this is a common thing that people often wonder about, is how do they get paid? I know there's some that work on commission, some that work on a fee structure, some that are a fiduciary, whatever that means. Can you kind of demystify and explain that for us so we know what the potential conflicts of interest might be or who might be on our side versus not?
I would say the majority of financial coaches are paid either per hour or sort of in a program fee, if you will. So we have a one-time session that clients can schedule with us. So if they're just trying to make a decision and they're facing a decision, they need help navigating that and sort of looking at it from different angles, we have a one-time session and there's a flat fee for that. Or if you have like a big change you're trying to make, or you're really trying to overhaul the way you're managing your money and get it really aligned with something that you're trying to achieve in the future, we have a 90-day coaching program. And like you were describing, Annie, I mean, we're meeting weekly with our clients during that program, because it's like there's real-time decisions that are getting made with the money that's coming into your checking account. How are we moving it around and that kind of thing? How are we optimizing four different areas of your money? So your income, your spending, your debt, and your savings, those four things, we're really looking to try and optimize them as much as possible in those 90 days. And really the goal obviously is to gain as much momentum as possible going forward, right? So there's a flat fee for that. So it's really, I mean, our prices for us specifically, and I would say that this is pretty common for most coaches, it's flat fee based. It's right on your website. Ours is right on our website. So you can see that sort of thing. We don't get commissions for anything. So we don't sell products or policies or anything like that where we get a commission or any sort of third party kickback. It actually is in our contract that specifically says we do not collect any third party kickback, commission, revenue, or anything from anything we recommend. And so the only way that we get paid as coaches is from the client having a session with us. So typically it's a really simple pricing model for a reason. And I think that's one of the benefits of it, is that there really shouldn't be a conflict of interest. I'll have a client come do a session and I'm giving them advice on their debt and maybe how to optimize their debt or what their debt strategy should be. And then an hour later, I'll have another client and their debt strategy might look very different than the last client that we're talking about, right? Because their income is different, their credit scores are different, their goals are different as far as do they already own a house or are they trying to buy a house and like those types of things. And so, because my advice is catered specifically to the person, right? So I know the financial strategies and the concepts that exist, but there's no one right way to do this. It's really about your situation. So I think that allows us to really take care of just the client right in front of us is to be paid for the session itself.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Thank you for that explanation. Because when I was in my 20s, I had no idea that that was a thing. And I remember early on helping my mom with her finances. And I was like, financial advisor, that's what I get. That's what people get. And so I talked with one and they convinced me to get, I think it was long-term care insurance and annuities and some other things. And I'm like, sure, that sounds great. And then later I find, wait a second, they're still making money every month on that product that I bought for them. And so it didn't sit right with me. So I think having transparency in how somebody's paid, especially if they're on your financial team, as you put it, that you want to know how each person is kind of partnering together with you. So thank you. All right. With that, I know we've covered a lot. There's probably a lot more we didn't get into, but with that, let's move on into our Life and Money Show Spotlight Round. Kelsey, we're going to ask you three questions that we ask all our guests. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Fantastic. The first question is about your life and money. So share with us one thing that you're doing to live a meaningful and intentional life by design.
Yeah. So one thing that we did in the past year was we became snowbirds actually at the age of 41. Ooh. So we actually live half the year in Michigan and then half the year in Phoenix, Arizona. So two very beautiful climates for part of the year and not so beautiful for the other part of the year. So we are there only in the most beautiful times, which is, I think, a big deal considering we have two young kids who are still in school. So there's a lot of questions around like, how do we do that? And it was very overwhelming to sort of create that lifestyle, but it was something that we knew we wanted. We wanted to be closer to my family for part of the year and closer to his family for part of the year. It was wonderful this past summer to see my kids play with their cousins all summer long that they don't normally get to see, but or only for like a few days on vacation sort of thing. And it's been really amazing. And I would say, from a financial perspective, it was a really big deal because I'm surrounded by financial professionals all the time talking with people. And this idea of sort of adding a second home and adding a whole second sort of book of expenses, if you will, right? So two utility bills, that type of thing was a really big deal. And I think it's easy to sort of shame that decision from a financial perspective as far as like your expenses are increasing, your cost of living is increasing. But we did it in a very calculated way. We were very intentional with sort of the long-term impact that this would have as well as the short-term impact and sort of balanced the financial cost of living increase that was going to create with the benefits we were going to gain, both from a tax perspective, honestly. So there was financial benefits as well as our family dynamic and wanting to be closer as a family and connect and be in nature all year round, as opposed to feeling like you have to stay in the air conditioning inside your house for a few months in the summer in Arizona. And those, it sounds sort of silly, but this is, I truly believe that I embodied what I preach every day to my clients, which is using money as a tool to live your best life. And my best life was adding some expenses to our lifestyle that we could easily afford. None of our long-term savings goals were impacted by this. So it was something we were able to do because we were being strategic about it. And because we were saying this is a life decision for ourselves. And if we own our own business, and sometimes you guys might know this, when you own your own business, you're supposed to be the best boss and take time off and that sort of thing. And then sometimes you end up being like your worst boss and you don't take time off and that sort of thing. And it has absolutely created an appreciation for my business and for my family and for my life that I couldn't have gotten any other way. I'm really glad that we did it.
I love the intentionality behind all of that, that it's not just about saving every dollar, as you talked about earlier. It's about, okay, now that we've compiled and accumulated this money, what do we want to do with it? How do we want to live our lives? And I love this kind of very intentional split between these two locations where it can really give your family the best life on so many different levels, it sounds like.
And real just quick question, valuing that as much as valuing other goals, like valuing lifestyle and saying that this is worth it too. It doesn't have to be an accounting decision.
Yeah. Real quick, I can hear the moms who are listening asking, what about the schooling? You touched on that real quick. Can you tell us how that schooling works? And then
Yeah. And I was just going to say really quickly too, that I think from a financial perspective, I do think sometimes people see financial professionals as always going the cheapest or most frugal route and always wanting to like not spend money. And I really do think that it's important for people to shed a different light, that you can spend money and feel really good about it and also be preparing for your future at the exact same time. Sacrificing one for the other in either direction is never the solution that we're after. So my kids, we are there for 3 months out of this in the summer. So ideally we will be there longer once my kids are a little bit older, but for right now, they're still in elementary school. I still have very young children. So we are there in Michigan for 3 months. We literally leave the day after school ends here in Arizona. And I kid you not, we fly back the day before school starts. So we do not even give them like 1 day transition time to rest. But honestly, they're troopers. They're great little travelers. We've traveled all around the world with them already at just a young age. They're really, really great travelers. So they don't seem to mind at all. But we're there for 3 months out of the year. And eventually, when my kids are a little bit older, we would like to put them in a world sort of academy where they go to school with kids all over the world. It's like an online program. It's something that's offered here in Phoenix, and where you can go to class any time of day. They'll have an integrative sciences class at 10 p.m. because that class will be offered to kids all over the world. So as long as you get sort of like your two sciences, your two maths in during a week, it doesn't matter what time you go. So we can sort of be anywhere. That doesn't start until they're a little bit older. So we're sort of like playing the long game again, that once they're older, able to enroll in that school, we'll put them in that school. We'll be able to be in Michigan for 6 months out of the year and here in Phoenix for 6 months out of the year. And eventually that's sort of what we're shooting for. But for right now, we're 3 months in Michigan and 9 months in Phoenix, which essentially is built completely around the school schedule.
Oh, cool. Oh, and having that long-term plan, I think, is a great thing to aim toward. And I think you also touched on something I don't think we talked about in the show, but there's probably people who have this misconception around working with a financial coach or a financial advisor and how the fear behind that. And maybe like, ooh, I have some bad money habits. If I work with a coach, they're going to suck all the fun out of life. They're going to make me have a budget. I'm going to have to cut back. But I think you spoke to that, that it's not about that. It's about helping you prioritize what you want to spend on and how you want to save and what goals and what vision you have for the future and making a plan toward that. And it might even mean spending more money and giving more allocation towards the areas that bring you joy in your life. So just wanted to speak to that real quick. But
yeah, thank you for saying that. I do think there's a very big misconception. And I don't think it's an unrealistic one. I think for decades, sort of the view of money or the way money has been talked about is sacrifice and save and pinch pennies and know where every dollar goes. I mean, I think it's actually a very pervasive messaging problem, honestly. Nobody wants to be on a budget. Nobody wants to say they even meet with a financial coach. I think that is another big misconception, is that if you are a financial coach, that we only help broke people or people in crisis situations. And there are financial coaches who really specialize in that of client and a person who is in that situation. And thank God for them. United Way offers free financial coaching services for people who are in a great sort of need financially. And they're doing really great work. I commend them. But a lot of my clients are not doing bad financially, or the situation is that they really don't know is honestly what it is. They think they're doing worse than they are oftentimes, is what tends to happen. So once we sort of show them, here's what you're working with, a lot of times our clients don't always know what they're spending per month on certain things, or they don't really know what their total debt is or how much they're paying in interest and those types of things. And it's within 1 month, we're usually getting it all optimized. I mean, it doesn't take very long for us to sort of know what levers to pull and to get it really nice and organized and sort of buttoned up so that we can see things clearly. Because I do think clarity is a really big piece of the puzzle when it comes to our clients. And a lot of the fear comes from just not even knowing what you're working with and being afraid of what you're going to see once you look. And of course, the coach's job is to sort of make you look and make you see it, right? So yeah, that can be really scary. But I mean, just 2 weeks ago, we've been seeing a lot of clients lately with really significant amounts of credit card debt. So I think the average in the United States is around $8,000 per person in credit card debt. And when I hear that statistic, I think, really? That seems so low to me compared to what I see on a regular basis. So just a couple of weeks ago, one of our clients came to us with $198,000 in just credit card debt, just credit card debt. So this doesn't include car payments, student loans, HELOC, also had a HELOC. I mean, just The week before that, it was $99,000 in credit card debt. So, I mean, we're seeing really big amounts. Now, you can imagine these amounts, they're also having a really big income, right? So the credit card company doesn't give somebody $200,000 in a credit limit unless you have a pretty decent income to go with it typically. But so we've got a lot that we can work with, right, to sort of get it cleaned up and get it paid down and that sort of thing. But even then, my job is not to say, here's what you have to do. My job is, again, to paint a very clear picture of option one, we get out of debt in this way. We move some money around. We maybe use a little bit of this over here to at least jumpstart your debt. And then we use the next 2 to 3 years to pay it down. And this is what your lifestyle would look like during that time. Option two is this pace. And we get it done in 1 year. And this is what your lifestyle looks like. Option three is it's a 5-year plan. You're going to be paying down your debt. It's going to take a little bit longer. Here's what's going to cost you in interest, but you're going to be able to do these things in the next 5 years. Which one of these gets you most excited? Which one can you get bought into? Because I truly believe one of the biggest mistakes, if you will, in sort of how money is talked about is it's so analytically focused and so financially focused. You know, you've got spreadsheets galore to help you analyze every decision that you could possibly make. But none of the spreadsheets take into consideration the buy-in or enthusiasm of the person who's actually implementing the plan, right? So if I have to follow these steps, if I'm bought into it, if I'm excited about that plan, I'm going to be a more creative problem solver. I'm going to stick to the plan even when it gets tough, right? I'm going to be more excited when the going gets tough and those types of things. Versus if I have a plan, but I really don't like it, I'm resistant to it, I don't think it's possible, or it feels too hard and I'm not going to be able to stick to it anyway. And so what's the point and all of that kind of stuff? Then chances are it's actually going to look worse on at the end of the day than it does on paper anyway. And so there's no financial calculation that sort of says, yeah, but what about the person's buy-in? And what does that do to the trajectory of this plan? And in my mind, that is everything. A client's buy-in changes the trajectory of everything they're doing. And so my job is to paint a very clear picture of what a person's options are so that they then can make a really confident and clear decision and take action going forward. And typically that is a game changer. It's like, well, I can do this because I can actually see exactly what my options are. And this one's the best one for me.
Mm-hmm. And it's just like going to the gym, just like you said, having that buy-in will keep you going and keep you accountable and sticking with that plan. So thank you. All right. Second question is about others' life and money. So share with us one life or money hack, a tool, a tip, a resource, a book, anything that's really helped you on your journey that you think might help others as well.
I personally love online savings accounts as a way of managing your money and earning a little bit of money on your money while it's sitting there. There are a lot of different options. The one that I personally use, and I have no affiliation with them whatsoever. I don't get anything for recommending them. It's just personally the one that I use is Ally Bank, Ally Bank. They allow you to open a whole bunch of different savings accounts. They're completely free. It links to your checking account wherever you're already banking. So you don't need to switch over all of your banking or anything like that. There's no minimum balance requirements and there's no fees. So the idea is you can open a bunch of different accounts. So you can have a car fund and a home repair fund or a gift fund and a clothing fund or a goal fund, right? So whatever it is that you're trying to achieve in your life, and every month you can put money into those things so that when you want to spend money on those things, you have the money already set aside specifically for it. And I do love the idea of just sort of savings buckets in general for managing money and feeling better about it. I think one of the best things clients can do is have a vacation fund. That way, when you go to take a vacation, you don't come back really stressed out on how you're going to pay for it or paying off the credit card afterwards and that sort of thing. Even if you use a credit card for the trip itself to pay for some of the expenses, if you do travel hacking, we do have some clients who do sort of credit card hacking and point hacking and that sort of thing, but you have the money to sort of pay it off. It actually makes the vacation so much more enjoyable. I mean, if you have a car, let's say you've got a big truck and it costs $2,000 when the tires need replaced, right? The idea of just having a truck fund right there that you can pull from, it makes it so that life's just normal everyday occurrences. These are just part of life, right? Like taking a trip, replacing the tires on your car, a medical bill or something like that. This is just sort of life. It makes it so that we can weather those things easier and not also be stressed by the financial impact of them. So I like how it can be one weekend and I can go clothing shopping on a Friday and spend a few $100 and use my clothing fund. And then my car can break down on a Saturday and I can use my car fund. And then I can book plane tickets on Sunday for an upcoming trip. And in my world, like none of those things are connected. right? Where in a lot of other people's world, like if those three things all happen in one weekend, it would be a really stressful weekend. They'd be like, oh my God, there's all these things happening. So I really love the idea of online savings accounts. Like I said, they're free and they do pay really good interest compared to most big banks. And so while your money's sitting there, it can actually grow while it's sitting there, which is great.
Mm-hmm. What a brilliant strategy to kind of earmark the funds for specific things and to parse it out into separate savings accounts. I love that idea. I think it gives people much more clarity and just intentionality behind what they want to use their money for. So fantastic. All right. Last question is around life and money in the world. So share with us one thing you're doing to help make the world a better place, whatever that means to you.
Yeah. The first thing I would say is I'm a huge advocate for foster care. So that is definitely where I love to spend a lot of my time, energy, and money to influence. So I would love to encourage anybody to check out your Department of Child Safety, wherever you're located. And there's a lot of ways that you can get involved without being a foster parent specifically. So you don't necessarily need to have children come in your home if that's not a good fit for you. There's a lot of different ways that you can give back to this part of our world. And I think it's very, very needed. You could also Google foster care to prison pipeline and just see how this influences our world overall and how I think it's really important that those of us who can have a positive impact on these children's lives in whatever way we can. You can be a mentor, you can advocate for them in the court system, you can just volunteer to help out the agencies who work with these types of situations on a daily basis, which can be a very emotionally taxing sort of profession, if you can imagine. So I would love to encourage anybody to sort of dedicate or donate their time or energy to their foster care and their community. It does have a really positive impact. And then I would say something that I really do pride myself on that I think is often overlooked as far as the impact we're having on the world is raising kind and loving and compassionate children and who are going to be influential someday and showing them the world. And we did something years ago. I realized that one of my own financial limitations, one of financial block that I had in my mind was I had this idea that if my husband and I made too much money or we became too wealthy, then my children would go up rich and spoiled. And so it was one of those things that was really limiting me and how I was sort of making some financial decisions with this fear of like, I didn't want my children to be entitled or spoiled or rich or that kind of thing. And my husband and I had some really great talks about it. And we realized, of course, obviously, that the value system that our children live their life by comes from us and from our actions and what we say and do every day, not from money. And so we sort of asked ourselves, well, what are the value systems we want to pass down to our children? What do we want them to have? And we came up with what we call the Dickey Family Creed. So my last name is Dickey. So the Dickey Family Creed, and it's a list of values that we sort of cherish as a family. And so we are always looking at those and we put our money behind those things. We ask ourselves, how can we live our life by those? And we talk to our children about those things. And so I do think it's really important to know that money can influence a lot of things. I think money can be a very powerful tool, both for good, but it doesn't replace just good conversations and kindness and compassion for humans.
What a beautiful message.
Yeah. There's so many people that reflect that back, that the next generation in different ways. I like the two different ways you kind of pointed towards helping the next generation in any way that you can, whether that's your own next generation or just the next generation out there who does need help. So yeah, those are great.
All right. Final question, Kelsa. I'm sure that there are listeners who are going to want to follow up with you to potentially work with you and your team and get to know you better. So what's the best place that they can go?
Yeah, you've got a couple of options. You can check out my website, which is fiscalfitnessphx.com, which is a total tongue twister. I'm sorry about that, but it's fiscal, F-I-S-C-A-L, fitness, and then the letters phx.com. Or you can find me on Instagram at moneycoachkelsa. I'd love to encourage people to sign up for my email list. I do send an email about every week with just sort of money musings, financial strategies, thought-provoking sort of questions about money. I share a lot about financial decisions we're making and how we went about making the decision. I actually think sort of the thought process or the critical thinking element of money is the most fascinating part of money, not necessarily the decision you ultimately made, sort of the outcome, but sort of the thought process you use to get to that outcome is the part of money that I love exploring. So I do a lot of that through emails. So I would love to encourage people to sign up for my emails, which you can do at either place, Instagram or my website.
Fantastic. Money musings. I love that. Kelsa Dickey, CEO, financial coach, author, podcaster, founder of the Financial Coach Academy and Fiscal Fitness Phoenix. Kelsa, thank you so much for being here with us and our listeners today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a lot of fun.
All right. All right. Well, that's our show for today. Thank you for listening to the Life and Money Show, the show all about helping you to live a meaningful and intentional life by design. For the show notes or to listen to previous episodes, please go to lifeandmoneyshow.com. For more information on how to invest with us to create passive income and to build wealth for your family, go to goodegginvestments.com. And if you enjoyed this episode and our riveting conversation with Kelsa, it would mean the world to us if you would subscribe, share this podcast with a friend, and leave us a 5-star review so we can continue to bring you incredible new conversations all about life and money. Till next time, remember that your financial journey is a lifelong adventure, and we're here with you every step of the way. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.